You're listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime, from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Niall.
Me?
It's you.
Just me, yeah.
And it's me, Brian. Yes, Dwayne's unbroken run has unfortunately been broken this week, so it's just us two.
Dwayne's dead. Long live the night. miss you, buddy.
And on this week, we are covering anime that aired the week of the 30th of October. No, 30th of... That'd be really impressive if we were covering 30th of October. 30th of September to the 6th of October, 2019, with the solitary exception of the Mob Psycho 100 to OVA, The First Spirits and Such Company Trip, A Journey That Mends the Heart and Heals the Soul. It's quite a long title, which may be why they didn't put it on Crunchyroll under that title. But,
Yeah. It doesn't mean episode OVA doesn't mean fire the imagination as much either.
No. This picks us up pretty much where we left off. We've got Sarazawa is now part of the gang.
He's clean shaven, he's wearing his proper clothes, he's got his little crib notes on how to engage in social interactions, especially with your boss. He's looking good these days.
And yeah, Regan's been hired to deal with a problem at a hot springs called the Ibigami Hot Springs in Zebra Prefecture. And they've got a problem is that people keep on turning up already exhausted and then giving them poor TripAdvisor reviews because of it.
Yes. But going into more detail, it's like one star, room is not as it appeared on website, vanished into an alternate dimension on the train here, breakfast, you know, was just lukewarm, not so much for the mission. Hot spring was nice, though. So I'll give one star for that, to that effect kind of thing.
And Regan sees this as an opportunity. He manages to wheedle a whole bunch more tickets, train tickets and accommodation. And it becomes a company outing and get-together, team bonding session.
Yeah. Regan admonishing the Mob and Ritsu about, come on, lads, isn't it some kind of school trip? You calmed down already. Oh, guys, we're going to go all these snacks. And just, you know, don't do the thing. Telling the kids off for the thing that you're doing yourself.
So they're heading down there, and Regan thinks that there's nothing going on, and then slowly it dawns on him that, oh, hang on, him and Sarazawa have ended up in a parallel world in their sleep. Mm.
Yeah, they feel like, oh, this is like those two planning this like a school trip. Why are going to do some kind of test of courage or some put some kind of prank to try and scare me? You're not going to fool me, lads. So what we're in alternate dimensions, obviously Mob's doing is kind of crafting some kind of illusion to try and scare us out. Well, you're not going to work on me. You won't fool old Reagan now, will you?
I was like, with the title, I was like, oh, is it going to be heartwarming? And you see, the most heartwarming it gets is that Sarazawa has like written this crib list of how to behave.
Yeah.
And at the end, he realizes he can throw that away. He doesn't need that.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's just Regan getting to be, trying to play it cool, and then slowly the illusion that erodes, and we see the man beneath the person he plays in front of his colleagues. Yeah.
Which we've, you know, we saw him get exposed before earlier on in the second season. That was hilarious. And the Whitey thought, let's have more of that because the fans love Reagan and they also love seeing his vulnerable sides, I'd say.
But the best bit is the fact that Sarazawa keeps on waking up and going back to sleep to join in with both Reagan and the other guys.
Yes, because the crux is you only are within this alternate world as long as you are asleep, and all if you happen to fall asleep on the train, it goes into this tunnel on the way to the inn, then it'll trap you in there. But if you just wake up, then you're free of it. Lads having a great time. They're just like having a lovely evening. Meanwhile, in the dream world, seemingly, I don't know, days, weeks, months have passed, and Reagan's slowly going insane.
And it's because, like, a local god, the people who own the inn, like the sort of like running the inn acts as being the priestesses of this local god. And apparently it was weakened and allowed some sort of demonic ooze to get in, which is causing the people to drift into another dimension on the train journey up.
Yeah, I talked to the hostess of the inn when she first goes to get her appointment with Reagan. She's wearing the little face mask, when you get a cold, stop, spreading your germs and your cough or sneeze or anything like that. I thought, are you the slip mouth woman? Are you the snake mouth woman? Is this going to be the story here? I was immediately suspicious of like yokai and evil spirits.
We've had her before, but it turns out she's just, because she's caught a cold, her psychic powers aren't strong enough to bolster the local guard to protect the country. The countryside from this, demonic creature. But also it was hiding the large mole which resembled the god.
Yes, on her face. Which is the mark of this lineage of priestesses.
Yes, because then at the end, after they've gone home, they've sorted everything out. We've had our technicolor battle in the psychic world. They think they've got everything sorted, but then we see the mother is an even bigger mole, and oh no, she's caught her daughter's cold. And so they're probably going to be back to square one by the time Regan and the gang get home.
Oh, well, it's amazing they're a trip away to the hot spring resort. and there's a sweet little moment then when they're all going away back. Reagan has gone through trouble of making business cards for like the assistant and the apprentice for Mob and Serizawa, which is, it's quite sweet. They, like, Ritsu is there, Terror is like, oh, don't show us in public. Like, people think you're getting weird ideas about you. And say, no. This is from Master. It's a really, really nice little gesture. It's a small little thing where it's very big and important for Mob and the kind of personality he is.
Yeah. The other on the train stuff is quite like, it's reminiscent of the train in Kitaro.
Exactly. The going across a blasted wasteland and being tormented for seeming of eternity.
We also get the scene of Dimple flying up the hostess's nose to confirm his suspicions about what was causing the breach in the psychic barrier.
Yeah, dipping out up to a lot of mischief here, even though there would be like ample time for him to do so. But he wants to chill out with everybody else, have a nice dinner, go have a nice bath. It's good.
There's plenty of time for Akiyatsuka's voice to get up to mischief this week. So.
Oh, yes. as well, the lads are still trying to get a look at the top of Teru's hair,
because
he was growing that back in. I thought, I guess he's been combing it over the cover of a bald spot, but they keep saying he was wearing hats, he's got a towel over his head, so I thought, do you think it's still there? This pop's probably fine, which we want to see, though. It's kind of a nice turnaround at all. They go to the hot springs, they're trying to peep on the girls next door or whatever, but instead they're trying to peep on just their friend who they brutalized in an earlier season.
Yeah, it was good stuff. But then, on to all the stuff which may or may not be good as we delve into the brand new season's anime, starting with Bananya and the Curious Bunch, episode 1, Untitled, in which we have a new narrator, a new setup, and I'm not watching any more Bananya after this episode.
Yeah. It's the premise, while more fantastical, is 100%. 100 million billion percent less interesting than just the sort of wildlife documentary setup of these tiny creatures that live inside your house, that live in your cupboards, in your fridge, and they're hiding all around you. And what do they get up to when you're not around? That's a good hook. I mean, that's what we got for Toy Story of them and all that. That's a great idea. This is the whole thing where they're on like a crazy alien moon or planet orbiting the Earth and are being observed from afar. Or they want to observe Earth from America or closer to it.
It's the claggers now. It's the setup of the claggers, and it's not as good as the claggers because it's not stop motion. It doesn't have Oliver Postgate as the narrator. It doesn't have Ebisu, what's his face, as the narrator either, who actually would be a great narrator for the claggers as well. Because basically they're now on a small world which is off the Earth, and then meteors hit the planet, and that seems to deliver, meowtiors, and delivers some item from Earth, which then the Bananias are amused by, and in this one it is a pair of glasses with a false nose and a moustache on, which Banania puts on, and the moustache goes in and out, and the other Bananias found it hilarious. That's the episode. I was hugely disappointed. I mean, I was already set up for disappointment when I realised the narrator was different. You say that on the comments page on the Crunchyroll, and you get marked down. I go, no.
What a hater.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, sure, that's disputing that. Yeah, it's some cute little banana mascot characters. We do like them. We like the previous cartoon Nerving, so we're cute and also kind of funny and interested and sort of weird. This is just not that.
No.
It doesn't matter how much evangelizing of us by well-known Twitter personalities is going to, like, change that this is just a not as good cartoon as the other one. So, come on.
Righty ho, on to Kimono Michi, Rise Up, Episode 1, Wrestler X Summoning, or Wrestler Summoning, or Wrestler Crossed with Summoning. Who knows how you're supposed to read it? Which we meet our hero, whose name I have forgotten to remember.
Genzo.
That's the fella.
Or Animal Mask, if you want to give him his stage name.
Yeah, how long before there's like a on that Mountain Goats wrestling concept album? I think there's a song called Animal Mask, or it's definitely about an Animal Mask themed wrestler. I was like, how long before somebody makes an AMV of that to this?
Not long,
not too long, I would imagine. But so he's wrestling in a DDT ring against the DDT wrestler Mal, but he's not being voiced by Mal. He looks like Mal. He's got Mal's trunks on. He's got Mal written on his trunks, but they give him like another name, like something Ogre.
Yeah, it's whatever the acronym stands for. It's different.
Yeah. He's in mid fight when he gets transported to another world.
It's Jerick Fantasy Land, ruined the castle of princesses there. A great hero is summoned you to our land. We need you to defeat the evil demon beasts who are plaguing us and destroying all the villages and such. He's like, you want me to go out and slay these beasts for you? Not on my watch, lady. And then, he goes and moves around or in the point. Oh, please, hero, we can have time for this later on after you complete your quest and when no one's watching. You're getting quite close up to me there. Ooh, embraced from behind. Whoop, and then throws it in into a German suplex and takes her out immediately. And also, kind of puts her in a compromising position then for the camera, which,
Macadamian Ogre is the...
Macadamian Ogre.
I don't know whether that is, maybe that is what Mal stands for, I don't know. He ends up with trying to save a... Well, first of all, he, like, harasses a wolf man.
Yeah, he's trying to escape from the authorities, and said, suspicious of me because I'm wearing this mask, but if I take the mask off, then, you know, they'll know who I am, and if one goes back out in the street, okay, trying to blend into the crowd. There he is, that guy walking around half-naked, that's the dude!
It's also worth mentioning that his dog, who also wears a mask in the wrestling ring with him, came with him as well.
And everyone was like going, what the fuck is that? Some kind of one-headed Cerberus. That's really weird.
I quite enjoyed this. It occasionally has bursts of great animation, normally during the wrestling scenes, whenever he's doing some wrestling. And it has some really good jokes, but it also has some skeevy, I'm a light novel isekai stuff in it.
It really does. It doesn't go that way. Like, you think, you know, leading up to at that point when gets in this encounter in the alleyway they're trying to sell somebody to slavery, and you think, oh god, this again, right? But it was actually the wolf girl who was, you know, being taken away. She's actually playing them, and she was intending on to, for them to do the subversive dash. What was it again?
She owed them. She was basically she. It was in the contract she'd signed when she'd borrowed some money that if she couldn't afford to pay it back, that was the setup of excusing the saves the slavery in the story. I can't remember what her scam was.
Yeah, I think it was like in the event of you defaulting on this loan, your debt would be cancelled. Well, you won't fall into debt, but you will be sold into slavery or something like that. But she was counting on getting caught, but then. Escaping or something? I don't know.
I can't remember. Like, she's also like hoping to be sold to like some glamorous member of royalty as well, I think was part of her plan.
At least they just they don't go too far down that path anyway.
No, because she quickly gets rescued because he doesn't want to see a dog being mistreated, even though he also wants to rub the cat's ears, who's the henchman of the, of the person selling her into slavery in the first place.
Yeah.
Then they get a job taking care of a bunch of Kerberuses, which have shown up. And he runs off to deal with them by basically figuring out which one's the leader. It's the one at the back. And then does a Canadian destroyer on it.
Yeah.
And then rubs his nose in its butt, and then eventually gets it rubbing its belly, and he's lying on the floor rubbing all three of these Kerberuses' bellies.
Yeah. The other, beast hunters there, like, oh, he's just rushing in, just head on all alone. He shouldn't be killed. He's either a madman or a genius, and then they're like very impressed by this, but then really freaked out by the way he subdues the pack. It's like, oh, that's something not quite right about that. And I'm not giving my finger out, but it doesn't seem quite right.
But yeah, his thing is like, why should we go and try and kill all these dark beasts? We should make friends with them, and then the world will be a better place. Meanwhile, the owner who was trying to sell the wolf girl has got his eyes set on his dog because he's never seen a thing like it in his life. It's got to be worth loads of money. And then the best joke's at the end when he's discussing his plans with his dog and the wolf girl.
Shigure, is her name.
Yes. Yeah. And then he's like, so all four of us could sell. He says, like, so that's what all four of us will be up to now. And then she's like, hang on a sec, four? And then it widens the shot, and there's a giant ant sitting at the table with her, that apparently she had never looked in that direction up to this point.
Yeah. That does intrigue me and entice me to watch. I mean, maybe another one.
That was it. Yeah. I was like, if that is actually a character and not just a gag.
But in the opening sequence.
It was a great gag. I mean, that was the thing. Yeah. It was that gag was so well executed, and the fact that it was something not furry and not like a mammal in any way, it did tickle me an awful lot. But unfortunately, there's too many things to watch, so I'm not sure I'll get a second chance for it.
Yeah, I like the idea. The premise was enjoying the hero who, like, rather than killing animals, just love the animals. My problem is, love his animals a little bit too much. And
he does.
But
he's presented. His character is presented innocently. Whether the actual story is treating it innocently is another question.
Like whether or not, he's innocent or not. It's still doing that. It's still framing it in that way. And that doesn't necessarily excuse it because you're doing the thing that. Doing the thing, you're making fun of this one thing, but you're still doing it to make fun of it, so.
Yes. I've seen worse, but, I was discussing this with Wayne. I think this is more skeevy than, what we saw of Do You Love Your Mum, to be honest. No one's up to things they shouldn't be up to in that. The show itself is leering, but the characters themselves are generally well behaved. It's just the situations make the show leering. Where yes, this character has no self control and no self awareness, and that's the thing which makes it skeevier than it would be otherwise. And the we're going to have some, we're going to talk about slavery, but this is the, it's not slavery as you know it. We've found this clever loophole. But that doesn't actually seem to be part of the plot, but
no,
it was a little bit of a warning sign initially, but,
And it's as well, how many times have you seen all this isekai stuff get made fun of before?
Yes.
Will it, just pick a lot of low hanging fruit? Cause it's very easy, very easy to
make. I was going to say, are there any of them which don't have their tongue in their cheek at this point?
Mm.
I guess that shield hero one that everyone hates or loves too much, but,
yeah. Well, there are, let's see. So at least two, I'm going to say at least one, probably two other parody or quasi parody ones on the slate this season. So who knows?
Yeah.
But it's hard to tell whether they're a parody or not, or whether they're exactly, just fully indulging yes. it in a humorous way. The line blurs. It's such a formulaic thing, but then there are so many like shades of grey as well within that formula. It's hard to discern one from the other.
Which of these
are being earnest about their content or not? It's very hard to parse now.
Anyway, let's move on to something which is probably no question whether it's being earnest about its content. It is After School Dice Club Episode 1: A New World. In which we're introduced to some very off-the-rack schoolgirl characters, and mm-hmm. they end up at a board game shop in the second half, and then we actually play a board game. And
yeah.
then they make friends, and they're told to come back on weekends or holidays, but I want to see you here on a weeknight yeah. again, says the class rep.
I'm the class rep. I told you can't be doing all these things. You can't be having a part-time job. I have a part-time job after 6, but I don't know. I asked to school or some shit. it's okay for me to be here, but not you. Okay. But they're right, though. That's wrong. We won't rat you out if you just let us come by, essentially.
Yeah, this is pleasant enough, but it's not exciting in the slightest. Yeah, it has no energy until it gets to the, oh, hang on, full emotion thing is not muted. It has no energy till he actually gets to the board game, I thought. Then you kind of don't see enough of the board game.
Not so much, no. It needs something to jazz it up a small bit. Something a little more dramatic, effects, or the talk about using your imagination. Well, why not go full into that and be a bit more abstract about it? Imagine yourself in the game and set up some kind of scene in there, for instance.
I've only seen them do that once in the comic, and that's the werewolf episode, the werewolf chapter, where it's shown entirely within the game. I'm not coming back to this. I'll read the comic if it gets a translation, probably, because it moves at a much faster pace, because it's a comic, so you can read it as fast or as slow as you like.
It does. It needs more drama and danger in an animated format.
Or just adapt it in half the time.
Yeah, that too. I can see how it would go on, though. I think kind of the first half of the episode would be kind of set up. There'll be some kind of thing, and they do some kind of lesson they learn about themselves or life, and then the board game they play will then reinforce that, or admit that lesson afterwards. You know.
Yeah, I think the second episode is, what's this boy's relationship to one of the girls? And it turns out to be far more innocent than what the other girls are thinking it is. And in the second half, they play cockroach poker.
Yeah. Just do it all with holograms like Yu-Gi-Oh. That'd be exciting.
Well, I think he's trying to present everything exactly as it is. So I think that's the thing. It's trying to sell you on playing these games. I think that's its, from what I read of the comic, that is its main aim. Is like, these are what the games are like. Wouldn't you like to play these games? Visit your local game shop.
In that case, it's more like a Mahjong comic then.
I think it definitely gets more like that as it goes along. I say, from what I remember of the cockroach poker story, is that the class rep, I think, gets annoyed because maybe it's one of the other early games, but she gets annoyed that the way she knows how to play doesn't work against these two people who don't know how to play it, but they clock onto a technique which negates her carefully crafted tactics. So they do get into like how the games work and various things like that. And they take it away from these girls every so often to other characters, like we get the shop owner's military flashback where he forges a friendship over a game of Catan.
Okay. He is just Umibozu from City Hunter then.
He is, yes.
Yeah, but he was getting kind of into it. I think he was a little bit of an area that this needs, you know, at the little, maybe when they play like games a bit more competitive or more their personality comes out, because he's getting into it and saying, if you have to roll a 3 or 4 to get past that, it was going to be paying me 11 gold. What will you do now, girls?
Yes, and it's not like that he's actually doing that deliberately to bring them out of the shells. No, he just wants to win.
Yeah.
And which then forces the class rep to actually join in and have some sympathy for our main girl. I would say I don't remember any of those. There's the shy girl, the loud girl, and the class rep at this point. I have no idea what any of their names might be.
Don't worry about us.
No, they're just archetypes who are going to turn up each week and play a board game. Then we've got, I don't know whether you watched this, I did, Days of Urashi Masakatasen, episode 1, untitled.
Yeah. What's that?
So this is a short by one of the Gainaxes, I can't remember which one it is, unlike the Hoolering Girls, where it was called, this has made its way to Crunchyroll. It is, about it's not about it, but the four main characters are the four singers from some sort of indie boy band who possibly only exist as cartoon characters. But they're at high school in this. And in the first episode, one of them shows up. He's the new transfer student. He's like, I'm the new transfer student. I've got to make a really good impression on my first day so everyone will think I'm cool. And then every time he's about to introduce himself, he keeps on getting interrupted by one of his other bandmates, who then introduce themselves in a far cooler way than he was had any chance to.
Right.
And that's it for 4 minutes. They just continually one up each other. And it was quite funny. And it's of these like low animation flash or whatever flash equivalent is nowadays, cartoon boom or something. Yeah, it was pretty good. I'm not sure I'm going to bother watching any more of it, but I was pleasantly surprised. I think I saw somebody mention it on Twitter, and I was like, okay, I'll check that out.
Will you buy one of the albums, though?
The song was actually pretty good, the opening theme song. I wouldn't buy it, but I wouldn't switch the radio off if it played.
It's already got hooked into you. Yes. Give it time.
It's a pretty catchy theme tune, and the opening credits have got them as their non-super deformed character designs doing weird stuff. Like fighting vampires.
Ooh.
I just don't know if that has any bearing on what's going to happen in the actual cartoon or not.
Ain't it possible in animation, Brian?
That is true. Such as bringing your sister back from the dead in Null and Petter, episode 1, Sister Complete.
Hmm.
Another short. Unlike the previous one, this one's really well animated.
It looks really good, doesn't it?
It does.
It's fab. Hope it keeps it up. But I think that that's part of the appeal is the way the designs and how they move. So I think they're going to be keeping it up. And also, it being a short, there is a great chance of them just be able to maintain that over so many weeks.
Yeah, so this is 12 weeks or so of selling you on a video game, which is coming out around Christmas. Apparently, simultaneous worldwide release.
Okay.
So this first episode, is it Null the scientist? She is, yeah.
Yeah.
Is trying to make a android version of her dead sister in like a Powerpuff Girls type way of putting in all the things which remind her of her sister.
Yeah, some flowers, the cut of her hair, just this bit of chosen something that's a bit soft as her skin, like, you know, some kind of food item. This is soft as her skin.
Oh, it was the teddy bear she puts in.
A big teddy bear, yes.
Which is why, rather than her big sister, she has returned a giant furry robot, which then turns out makes loads and loads of drills.
Yeah. It looks, let's say, reminiscent of Eva from Wall-E, a bit like that. It's got kind of big eyes. Just like somebody in a big mascot costume, which I think is the point in the idea. It's being a robot, you can do all the robot stuff you see in anime. I should say, being a super robot with sprouting drills, or when they're flying away, it's just like has the jet scrander from Mazinger attached to it.
Yes, because she's got to fly to school, which seem at the end up in Africa.
the second Africa sighting this week.
Yes. Then she turns into like a Gundam type configuration. I'm sure it's a specific Gundam it's referencing that I don't know.
I think so, but not one I've seen.
To get back on track, and then Null says, "See you next time." You get the ending theme. And I was thoroughly, because I was already expecting high things from this, because I checked out the trailer and the website, and I was like, oh yeah, this is exactly what I was expecting. Highly enjoyable, and then you get like a nice pixel art laced ending theme with homages to various old video games.
Hmm.
This is some of the best animation of the week, I think, in this.
Yeah, I was thoroughly charmed.
Yeah, it says game version of Null and Peta will launch worldwide on December the 20th on Steam. The release includes both game and anime, so you get all 12 episodes of this, and also one OVA only available with the release.
What a bargain.
So let's see whether this does its job. It probably won't, because I never buy video games on Steam, so...
Same. But I will patronize your charming anime short series.
Yes. Then, we've got Dr. Stone, Episode 14, Master of Flame.
Hmm. Which kind of episode I was thinking, this will be, how are they going to adapt this one, or just pick a part of this for animation, because it involves somebody being fooled into standing still for a very long time. I kind of wondered, how successful are they going to be in making that engaging and exciting? For me, mostly, but you still kind of see the creaks in it a little bit, and the kind of leaps of logic required to get you there.
On the other hand, I bet the animators were saying, oh great, it's a scene where people stand still for a very long time.
Yeah.
Who can put our feet up a little bit this week.
We'll show you a little bit of the great animation from when Kinro beat Magma last week. He was like, oh yeah, remember that how sweet it was, now Kinro totally beat him. It's like, but I got outside help, and him being fucking goody two shoes says no. I will not. It is like an old, considered like outside helper interference, and I'll take the loss. But it's all just a distraction, so that Mary can stick up and just bash him in the head.
What a swine! And after Suika says he's become a clean Magma.
Yeah.
Not only has he cheated, he's broken a little girl's heart.
And her glasses.
Yes. But that's okay, because Ginro has been stuffing his cheeks with these leaves. And now he's going to eat them all, because if that science potion was powerful, well, imagine what just eating the raw ingredients will be like.
Hmm. He's all hepped up now. He's going a mile a minute. Yes. And imagining himself as super king awesome, super cool dude. But he just looks like a lunatic. Which against his opponent, because, the opponent is a bit more skilled than him, but Ginro, he just won't go down. It's just like, haha, you blow his glance off me. It's like, oh, it's so cool. But in reality, he's like, bro, my god, my face, but I'm still not going down, so. Poor dude. and sort of chases his opponent, like, off the edge of a cliff. But then he comes down hard, so, If you need him for a next round to fight, he's not going to be able to either. So they're in a bit of a bind.
Yeah, because then Kohaku doesn't get back in time.
Mm.
before, she hadn't gone back in time before this. That was before the Ginro fight. But that was okay, because she was just like, as long as Suika hadn't drowned, they'll figure it out somehow. And then we get the Chrome Magma fight, where we get the standing still for a long time, because he's managed to turn the lens in the broken helmet into a convex, because it is concave, and he's convex. He's made it convex by just sweating and crying into the lens. Which I forgot about that, because that comes, it's Chrome winning by sweating a lot. We'll come back later in the series as well.
Yeah. But now he's the right lens. You saw what Senku could do with it before, and to the slight fires with. Didn't account for, we need that certain weather conditions and everything to be just right to for a flame to ignite. Because that's super cool bit for Senku, just like he puts his fingers to his forehead and just doing the mental calculations, calculating the rate of fun speed of light, you know, about long takes for light to get from the sun to the earth, accounting for like atmospheric refraction, everything else that is like, it's just a cool little visual thing. Which the other characters do it in the comic, then like when Gen's trying to do some super cool mentalist stuff, he does the same little motion. It's like, oh, he's so cool when he does that.
And the reason he's doing that is because Gen has shown up and asked him that question. Because Gen needs to know, how long do I need to trick Magma into standing still for? First of all, scaring Magma by saying, hello, I'm back after you killed me. And now I'm going to curse you for killing me. And he fires some confetti at him and says, I've put a curse on you now, and if you move, your heart's going to explode. And Magma's like, that's cheating, he's cast a spell on me. And Senku's like, well, if you move and your heart explodes, it's cheating. But if you move and your heart doesn't explode, it's just taunting. It's perfectly within the rules. So I ain't going to move, Magma.
And Magma being this superstitious lunkhead that he is, just goes along with it and saying, trying to intimidate Chrome then, or trying to check him out of it. But I think Magma is how he gets a bit more confident and thinks, no, I'm going to do it. And it's like, no, come on, Chrome, my powers can only hold him there for 1 minute. You have to try and use your might to defeat him by then, otherwise. And then that just can be case to him then, okay, you got to hold us here for 1 minute. It's all I need to light his clothes on fire.
Yeah, and then Gen goes into the psychology of it all by saying, it doesn't matter whether Chrome believes it or not, this has now given Chrome to get a minute's rest after the beating he took in the fight.
Or Magma even.
Magma rather, yeah, Magma. This gives Magma a chance to get a minute's rest from the fight he had with Kinro at the start. So, regardless, Gen's ploy has worked, and then Chrome's ploy works. He sets fire, and then in attempting to put it out, he just causes it to spread. You know, further bit of science that Senku explains. And Chrome kindly helps Magma put himself out by pushing him off the village into the water.
What a nice guy.
Victory for the Kingdom of Science.
Yeah. Wonder lads.
And then new ending theme.
I think I like the old one a bit more still, though. This one, I just really another listener to.
Well, obviously, this is heavily foreshadowing what we're probably going to get. Is it next episode? I can't remember when we get into the flashback.
Probably.
I think it's the talk with Ruri.
Yeah, wrap up this end of this whole rest of this whole tournament, and then, that's it.
Yeah, because otherwise it's a bit too, giving a little too much away for too long if it's going further into the series. There you go. So, as always, do not imitate without expertise. As you said, the amazing animation was last week, but there's something else this week which I'll get to, which also rests heavily on laurels from not just the previous week, from a year or two ago. I mean, I was happy for the scene to come back because it is one of my favourite scenes, but we'll get to that when we get to One Piece. because now we have another new thing to talk about. Welcome to Demon School, Arumakun. Sorry, welcome to a Demon School, Arumakun. Episode 1, Arumakun from Demon School.
Who's going to Demon School again?
That'd be Arumakun, who is one of these comic manga or anime protagonists who has the worst parents. It's firmly established right from the start that he has the worst parents, and then every little glimpse we get of his parents establishes that they're even worse than we realised.
But yes, these are actual criminals.
Yes. We meet him making ends meet, working on a tuna ship.
Deadliest catch. almost his deadliest catch as well.
It is.
In the middle of a storm, a bunch of the cages with the frozen fish, or the preserved fish, it just kind of come tumbling down. But he's whisked away into the night just before he meets his end.
By Sullivan. A demon, apparently heir, like the guy everyone expects to be the next guy on the demon throne, has apparently... Aruba's parents have sold his soul to this demon.
But this guy is super bad. What's he going to do? He's going to fucking kill me or eat me or what? It's like, no! I've always wanted to have a grandson. No, someone I can just dote over and give sweets to him and have like lovely little visits with. Won't you be my grandson, pretty please? You can say no if you want to. It's like, remember, Chris, like, this guy isn't so bad after all. And he's telling me I can go out whatever I want to. I will just tell him, yeah, sure, because he's such a put upon the young lad that he can't say no to anybody. Especially not to the sweet old demon granddad.
Yeah, who has a doubly sweet, super deformed form as well. Yeah, and then he rolls him into demon school. But don't worry, he douses him in demon perfume so that the demons won't smell his human nature, which is proves to be useful when we learn of the school song during the enrollment.
Let's kill all humans. Humans are the worst. Let's drink their blood and smash their brains. La 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 la.
And so, he's absolutely terrified. And like the best kid at school, the best kid in being enrolled is supposed to be doing like the introductory speech. But instead, Sullivan has arranged for a rumor to do it instead because he's also the chairman of the school.
Yeah. Pass him a note and just says, read this. Just read this out and, you know, everyone will be with you. Don't worry about us. Everything will be just fine. And it says, okay, Klaatu Barada Nikto. It was like, oh, what the fuck? He's just chanting a forbidden spell. It's like, doing the kind of, trying to do for his adopted grandson, the whole go into the prison yard and punch out the biggest guy you can see. Everyone knows you're a badass. He's a chanting a forbidden spell, and nothing big at all. It's just a little charm so he won't trip over at all today. But if he got it wrong, he would have exploded. What a badass.
That's the best bit, is like how the teachers start off angry. And then like, that's really cool. there's so many good go-to. It's stuff I've seen plenty of times in other forms, but yeah, it's always like the reversing of expectations because you're in hell. It's like the weirdest demon girl has the reversed body standards, which is straight out of Galaxy High with the,
Having like the Haybar character designer in this, you just get so many grey looking weirdos in the crowd scenes. It's fantastic.
The narrator explaining that the spell that he's cast means that he's immune to trips and falls for 24 hours. Which is very useful when the smartest kid in school gets into a fight with him for showing him up. But that's not what really saves him. What really saves him is the technique he's learned over the first 14 years of his life.
To avoid danger and trouble. Yes. The master of dodging.
The overwhelming crisis evasion capability.
eye.
That allows him to dodge all the fireballs that has been thrown at him. But when, is it Alfonso Alice or something?
Asmodeus.
Asmodeus Alice, yeah. Pulls a sword on him and charges at him, but then he dodges. And oh no, the sword is going to pierce one of the his classmates. He grabs hold of him, but because he can't trip, it means he ends up putting him into a perfect German suplex.
Yeah. Number two this season. It's the rules now.
But it's the way the director says he put him in a German suplex that one, if you could comment on it, you would say, yes, it was absolutely perfect. And then,
now
yes.
He's like he gains Asmodeus then as his, you defeated me in combat. For this, I will be your loyal servant. I'm at your beck and call. Anything you need, boss, we'll sort it out. So now he's like the most notorious and most popular guy in school. Also, he's like, had the girls falling at him because he saw how heroic he was. Oh, like that girl almost got hurt, but he just, like, effortlessly, expertly, just, like, saved her from danger. He says, oh, he's so interesting. Wow, that boy. And he doesn't know what to do with all this because, like, I'm just some dude.
Yes.
What's everyone talking to me now?
His plan not to not stand out has completely failed by the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Then we get the ending theme. It's like, I believe it is like Devil Cuties. And then we get like a crude little bit of animation from the point of view of the girl he saved.
Oh, yeah.
Who's trying to, declare her love to him, but then Asmodeus like scares her off just with a glare, and he's like saying, "I'll do anything for you." And that's in the preview, isn't it? I think where he's offering to carry him around on his back and things.
Yes, well, he's doing that. Find out next time. I do say there is something. No, you've seen a lot of these devices before, and you know. Maybe it's because it's been so long since you've seen him.
Yes.
Maybe done in this manner. It's like, oh, this is old fashioned charm to it now. This seems almost like nostalgic even. You don't see a lot of school comedies, done this way, like in recent years. So to see one do it, in this manner, it's kind of refreshing then in a sense. I get the same vibe when we were watching, Magical Circle Guru Guru. There was also things, yeah. If you've watched anime for any later time, you've seen these things before, but it's just the way they're doing it, just harkening back to this older time, which when you've been mired in so many of kind of the recurring things that are popular in whatever couple of years with that now, when you get something like this is a bit of a throwback. It's not necessarily a throwback when it's executed so well. It's just, yeah, a little refreshing.
Yeah. It is, I believe he's a veteran director on it. Makoto Moriwaki. Oh yeah, he did the part of the High School Kim and Gumi movie. So yeah, that's definitely going all the way back to the 80s. Also it's on NHK, so unlike, Guru Guru, I suspect there won't be, or decreases the chances of occasional skeeviness.
Yeah, there's ample opportunity for it, but as I said, you know, it's not like every, like, demon girl in there is some sort of busty succubus. They're all either like minotaurs or cyclopses or whatever, everything. Again, like a good variety of weirdos.
Or appear just to be normal girls, but with horns. Milky Holmes he's the director of Milky Holmes.
Everything for it, looks like.
Yeah. Which I didn't get on with, but I think it was more the script rather than the direction. We did an episode of Yurosai at Sura as well.
Hasn't everyone?
No. A lot of people aren't old enough to have done. So that was highly pleasant. If I could find time, I'll squeeze it in, and I probably will find it easier to find time to squeeze it in than The Demon Girl Next Door, because it's on Crunchyroll, so I can just watch it on the PS4 without any problem. Then, let me move that around a little bit. Africa Salaryman, Episode 1, Africa Pervert.
Yeah.
Truth in advertising.
Just saying it out loud, saying the phrase out loud, just tickled me in the right way, doesn't it?
it's one of these annoying shows though, where it's clearly like probably the licensor has told them to call it Africa Salaryman, even though it has an English name in the titles, called African Office Worker, which is better English than Africa Salaryman.
Salaryman has got, I don't know, a nicer ring to us.
If it was African Salaryman, it would have a nicer ring to it. I'm not sure it has a nicer ring with just Africa Salaryman. To me, anyway. To these ears. Or these eyes. Anyway, it's just a little thing. I was like, ah, Kate, right, you're that show, are you? You're doing that. People aren't talking to each other within the same organisation.
Well, think about that bit. The fans of the show, they won't know what one way we're talking about. It's going to be like looking up like just one version of the name, yes, and getting one side of the discussion about it, and then the other side of the other term, getting the other side of the discussion about it, and then never shall the twain shall meet.
Maybe just the people who can't stand Toucan, and that's the thing which is going to stop them watching it, and the people who don't mind Toucan. Well, not don't mind Toucan, but
we
find
acknowledge that he's awful.
He knows that he's awful and find his awfulness funny. Can call it by another name. Because that seems to be where the divide is. He is the character which is like, if you can't get along with like a hyper George Costanza, then, you probably won't get along with this show as far as I can tell from this first episode.
Yeah, even how terrible he is, and just with the scene when they go into the mixer at the end and the absolutely reprehensible behavior, and I mean, something in the voice performance too. It's just, it's one of the Osamatsus, and even just like, because it's all, it's three or two kids with them at this mixer, and they all have like, they're all color coded as well, and they got, are they riffing on that a little bit? Maybe, but it's similar kind of level of meanness and fucking vile behavior that was in there, and people loved Osamatsu, and I can't see where exactly Toucan is crossing the line when Osamatsu did the same or similar, if not worse.
I think the thing you could argue is the Matsu brothers are they're complete failures, whereas at least Toucan is able to hold down a job. Maybe he should keep his job based on the fact that he drugs his boss. It's another matter.
But what if the Osamatsus were the kind of people who were able to just fail upwards in a company?
That's true.
Toucan.
I mean, yes, when I came to the end of the episode, I came to the conclusion, I think I've known at least one Toucan in my working career. So the Africa pervert is because, we first of all, we get the Lion King opening, then we get some Fortnite dancing in the opening credits. Lion seems to be, I mean, Lion and Lizard seem like perfectly reasonable people.
Yeah. Lion's a little odd, maybe. He's got, his big intimidating, like, persona, well, a big intimidating appearance mask, like, he's actually a fairly, very laid back and fairly soft-spoken guy, which questions then, is he a good fit for middle management? Because he can't really be mean to anybody. He looks mean, but he can't actually be mean to anybody.
Yes, because one of the segments is the pair of Toucan and Lizard think that he's angry at them for, well, in Toucan's view, it's something Lizard did, though even when he's explaining what Lizard did, he did it. while Lizard and Toucan are on the train, Toucan's like just being an absolute dick, claiming that schoolgirls make false claims about being groped on the subway. And then Lion's daughter and her friend accuse him, and they get into an argument. Lizard leaps to his defense by showing, no, he's into this sort of porn. These are the sort of women he's into.
He was doing so well up until that point. Then had to give him the hard proof.
And then the start of the recurring joke through the episode is that whenever Toucan wants to make an escape, he rips Lizard's tail off.
It's like in the nature documentaries. It's just like gouts of blood just spraying from the stump.
Yeah, between that and the scenes when he's drugging Lion and then later, like, getting cat toys out to distract him. I was like, okay, so where are these visuals coming from? So because it's a web comic, you can look at the comic. And it's the director who's pretty much most of everything on the show. And I was like, okay, right, it's him who's adding all these visual flourishes, both the shift between the 3D and the 2D. I like they've got that white drop shadow on the 3D, which made it look a little bit in my mind like the old, film fair Paddington with the humans who are all like cut out pieces.
Oh, yeah.
So they had like a white space around them. And then it goes into like the wild psychedelic 2D stuff. And then there's like a really, when they're at the mixer, there's like that one great shot down the table they do.
Yeah. Which is changing the end of a sentence, like just like mid word, someone comes out on a different outcome. You great big sack of sugar.
And there's like, and also the bit where they're all leaving the, I know it's not the bit. It's when he's walking up, he's sidling up to Lion. That's got some. I've seen people complain about the 3D. I like the 3D. I thought there was some good movement in it.
It's the collage of animation styles, where it's flipping between each one as is appropriate for the scene or gag they're trying to put off. It's really good, and you get this little like extra flourishes there, like when you say two cans, like, you know, he's putting like these kind of shoulder rolls in and going like, "Hey, boss."
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. You did a much better job of describing what I was aiming for. And there's lots of like on-screen JoJo's type
menacing,
which makes sense because you look up the director's demo video from 2015, and he worked on the openings for part 1, 2, and 3. Amongst various other things, like Pharrell Williams videos.
Mm-hmm. Now this you will find time for, I imagine.
Yeah, this is one of the things that I'm going to try and find time. Well, I will find time for this because I'm maxing something. So yeah, that's for sure. I really enjoyed this first episode.
Did you feel like the having the full like TV half hour length, that was, you were fine with that, because there were like individual like sketches? So
yeah, I was surprised.
Little bits,
but yeah, ultimately it's like Psyche K, where it's essentially four or five of them stuck together in a half hour, because it's essentially four, I think, and then after the credits you get the fifth one, which is about Lion's daughter and her gorilla friend.
Doing the whole, oh, I'm a scooger, running late, I gotta like get to school, oh, I'm gonna be so late, and then they had to toast him out, but in this case it's a whole like zebra leg.
I do like the tension between it being Japanese society and also being the savannah. I think one of my favourite jokes is Lion complaining that you can't read things unless they're 4 kilometres away.
But I don't think it will be an exaggeration, though. He's very far-sighted, but what? Oh, wait,
That's because that's
maybe a Lion does need glasses to see things close enough.
Yeah, highly enjoyable. I'll be back next week for more.
Mm.
And then Vinland Saga, episode 13, Child of a Hero.
All them chickens come home to roost, all those little seeds you've picked up on, little crumbs.
Just come straight out, Askeladd comes straight out and says, "I hate Danes," this episode.
Fuck.
While his best mate is going, "I don't really know that much about him." Yeah, sorry, Bjorn.
Well, I guess you were his best mate then. He has Gratianus. Friendship ended with Bjorn. Gratianus is my friend now.
But yeah, it's, most of the episode is, them bargaining with the, other Welsh kingdom and like having to clue them in on what their plan is. And then we get the ancestry of Askeladd. Should really call him Askeladd because it's important that the Ash bit is in there.
Yes. Yes, that's what his name means.
Yes.
Ashen Man, Ashen One.
Yes. Because we'll get that explained shortly. And also like the realization that Ragnar has got to go. both from within the story and also from the opening credits.
Because it is just, his style is just, his whole thing is just not, you guys got no fucking nuance or subtlety. This thing is, oh, we're the Danes, you just let us all do what we want. We're fucking Danes, we've got a fucking big army. This is, dude, you know who this is? It's the Prince of Denmark. And asked us, like, dude, just be cool. Those guys up in the hill who are holding us up and got us surrounded, they know they gotta put on this whole thing because we'll be able to get through their territory no problem, but they just gotta cool it. Like, they gotta save face, they gotta, like, play it cool. Like, no! This is an imposition upon his royal highness. It's like, a fuck's fucking
well, Viking no, he does make a reasonable explanation. I think Ragnar's point is legitimate as well. He's like, you don't know what it's like. Has been like for this child. I basically had to keep this child alive for his entire life because the rest of his family are absolutely awful.
But the thing is, but Asgard is like, yeah, I know. I'm going to do the same thing. You've got to get concede a little bit to get just like imposing your wills into this. We had a fun, tough life. We've all had a tough life, dude. I'll tell you about fun my fucking life. Well, I'm going to say it to these lads over here.
Yeah, but yeah, he's asking a bit much from Knut at that point, but maybe not after the end of the episode when Thorfinn's got under his skin and Knut finally speaks to somebody who isn't Ragnar.
Speaks in full sentences. Like, wow.
Which again makes sense because this is probably the first time he's been around somebody his own age who wasn't a servant. And, similar for Thorfinn for most of his life now at this point.
Yeah, and they're shooting like the jibes at each other, but they just keep going on. It's just like, oh, these two will be firm friends if this were any other anime series, because they're just sniping at each other. Unfortunately, this isn't a regular anime series. No. It's going to end in a far more bloody and tragic manner. But,
yeah,
no, that's down the line.
That is down the line. I like the new opening again, because it's Man with the Mission.
Man with the Mission is better than the fucking what was me butt rock of the last opening.
Yeah, I also think the opening animation's more distinctive as well. And the thematic stuff works quite well. Like, Matt, it's definitely drawing on the comparisons between Canute and Thorfinn. With the scenes, which is why you can tell Ragnar's marked for death from the opening credits, because it's like, here's Thorfinn seeing his father wander off into the distance, and here's Canute seeing Ragnar wander off into the distance.
No, but maybe like Ragnar's going to retire and live at a farm somewhere. It's like, I've taken you as far as I can, my boy, you must become your own man now without me.
Poor old Coned.
Some people were surprised that they didn't expect Aslan to have this, all these layers of complexity to him when they first started watching the TV series, and presumed they hadn't read the comic and just weren't watching the anime. But I suppose, like, you know, it's nice to be surprised in that way. But I think that's, there's a lot of the kind of characters, even someone like Bjorn has got these layers to him as well. Like, he's like, one mercenary Vikings, they go off killing and pillaging and all that, but they also like think about stuff. Maybe not too deeply, but they do think about stuff. And they have their human relationships as well. So you can't just write him off as being dumb barbarians. That's kind of the whole point of, or one point of the series as well, is that, yeah, these guys are dumb barbarians. I find mercenary marauder guys, but, they have reasons for what they do and beliefs for what that back up why they want to do these things. Just they have a culture and things, and it's when that culture, it's hard to understand a culture that's so far removed from your own, and you gotta try and find where the similarities lie. Which is sort of again another bit of that's kind of added in with the trying to get along with the Welsh as well, and try to get through their territory and how to relate and understand them too. Because they're trying to develop the long game too. If the Danes do take over Britain, maybe they just kind of put together this non-aggression treaty so that they won't infringe on Welsh territory. And Canute is integral to that.
Yeah, I saw someone on the anime news network comments, I think, was saying, why aren't they more concerned about the Vikings in Ireland? I was like, just you wait They'll get to that in the story.
Yeah.
That is literally why they want the non-aggression treaty. Is to stop the English marching through Wales to get to Ireland. Or rather, the Danes and English. The Danes who will shortly be the English, marching through Wales to get to Ireland.
Oh, they'll get here, don't worry.
Try to think. Yeah, I mean, obviously, some of them are stupid, though. That's also part of the point. Is that that's Canute's frustration later on in the series, is that...
It's more so that Darren's mindless barbarians. They have reasons and beliefs so for doing what they do. And they can be very, very brutal and strange and unnerving to you. But as well, some of the things you do and believe are really weird to them. Like, what's this guy on the cross? He looks like such a weird wimp. Why did I follow this guy? They don't understand what fucking love is. So, you know, there's much we can learn from each other.
Yes.
And if we could do that, maybe we'd be a lot less bloodshed.
I do like that we'll eventually get into other characters like Flocky. We'll get more of their point of view explained. But that'll probably be two seasons away at this point. But hey, soon he'll meet Thorkell and soon people will start calling him Dicehead. So that's to look forward to. at this point, I've replaced Flocky's name in my mind with Dicehead. Righty-ho. Then we've got first episode. I only watched one, didn't watch all three of them. Babylon, episode one.
There's three of them up already.
Yes.
Like all I did with Vinland Saga, speaking of.
Yeah, an entire arc's worth are up. Babylon, episode one, Suspicion.
Different mythical place.
Yes. So, I'm not going to try to explain everything which happened in this episode, because it goes on quite... I will say, to begin with, I was pleased I watched whichever Detective Conan film we recently watched, because that explained the difference between various arms of Japanese law enforcement, which helped me know what the difference was between the Tokyo public prosecutors and, like, why isn't the police doing this? Okay, right, they're doing it instead. So, yes, we've got our main character, who I forgot to write his name down, but he is one of the Tokyo public prosecutors, and he's investigating false advertising claims for a pharmaceutical company. Essentially, the Department of Health has said that these guys have got four universities, they've paid four universities off to give them these various results on the tests of this particular pharmaceutical. So they've got 700 boxes of paperwork taken out of their building, and they're going to search through it all, him and his partner, his junior partner, and we're going to find out all this. As they're going through, though, they find a message written in blood, hair, and skin in the notes for...
Whoa, a hair and skin.
Yes, that's what they find.
That's determined.
And the message is just the word F written over and over and over again in a stylized fashion.
Fuck.
So this is... it's like two pieces of paper stuck together, and they peel it open, and it's like, ugh! And as somebody pointed out on Twitter, it's probably the best animated pieces of paper being pulled apart you're going to see this year. And this is for a different drug than the one that they're investigating, and this is a different university testing it. But obviously they're like, okay, this is odd. We better go and investigate the doctor who ran this test. So they go to this university and they try and find the doctor. They can't find him, so they go to his rooms. They can hear music blaring out of his room, but he's not answering the door. So he gets a warrant, and they let themselves in, and they find him dead, hooked up to his own anaesthetism equipment. With a smile on his face, he's also completely naked.
Whoa. That's obviously someone trying to, I'm going to guess, frame that up as, oh, it's like suicide by sexual misadventure or something.
Something like that. So this leads them on, this is where I'm going to get off the plot point part, because this leads them now into... They start investigating, and it takes them towards, like, bribery and corruption amongst this mayoral race for a new, decentralized part of Tokyo. They're saying Tokyo's business is too centralized within this, the center of Tokyo. So they've deliberately made this new part of Tokyo where it's going to try and pull some of the power, spread it out around Tokyo rather than just have it all in the center.
Right. So become his own little autonomous little region within the city almost.
Yeah. And somebody seems to be bribing essential, like, people in charge of various block votes, child prostitutes, or maybe just, yeah, a child, or might be college age. It's not clear. Anyway, they've got video of this happening to this doctor, of like these two people turning up, and then they start investigating somebody else, and they reckon the girl is not a professional, so they think after she's seen the man she's been taken to, that if they follow her, find out where she lives, then they can apply pressure to her to get her to become a witness, and they'll be able to take down this corruption. So he sends his junior to follow her while he follows the guy who was delivering her. And his junior calls back and says, yeah, found where she lives, everything's cool. And then he gets a text message from him, and he rushes back to his house and finds him hanging by his window. And the message was his suicide note. And that's the way the episode ends. And you're like, what the fuck? Because it's built up for the entire episode, this friendship between the pair of them. And there's nothing to hint that he's going to commit suicide. And as you say, it looks like the first murder, the first death looks like a suicide, but was it a murder? And now this is like clearly a murder or something to cause him to commit suicide, just like that, like in a snap. And that's where it leaves you at the end of the episode. And he's drawn in two other mates, so I don't know whether they also end up dead in the next two episodes. He contacts a police officer that he knows and also a journalist that he knows to help him. It is really well directed. I rewatched a bit of it before the podcast just to like... Was it as good as I remember it being? Because it's got problems. I don't like the colour palette, and it relies a lot on crappy CG cars.
It looks very grey and dark green and black.
But it is really well directed. Like, the shots it chooses, I saw someone comment, like, maybe I didn't notice in the first episode, but apparently it plays with, screen ratios.
Oh. Like for CCTV or something?
I think just to set the tone of a scene and things.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I was really impressed. And it feels like a political thriller / procedural that you could make live action. At the same time, I feel like I'm not sure I trust necessarily Japanese drama quality to look as good as this does. So maybe that's why they chose to go with anime.
Yeah, as well, they were talking about building like a whole new part of Tokyo and trying to make that like look different and stand out from the rest of the city, and i.e. have brand new architecture and fun infrastructure and be easier to do that animation.
And they also
as well, though, I agree, like I do want to see what they want to do with the animation region, make it despite being a character doing my live action thing as well.
Well,
by the sound of us, they're getting the direction and the boarding, right? That's a
And as obviously, as pharmaceuticals are involved, that may also be another reason why they need to go with animation. That people may end up taking these pharmaceuticals, and we need to illustrate that within the visuals.
Yeah. Oh, is it hard to get filming inside of probably all these pharmaceutical factories?
That's true. They've never been in a factory yet. They've only been in offices. Yeah, it was cracking stuff. I highly recommend it. I see people compare it to Ghost in the Shell. It's all I would say that's about right, because it's all the bits in Ghost in the Shell that I like without the stuff I don't like, i.e. the science fiction is not there. It's just the cop stuff.
The forensics, the police retrieval. It's a prime time TV like police procedural drama.
But with kind of that,
it's an anime.
That political thriller stuff you'd get laced into like a British one of those that you wouldn't necessarily in an American one.
Yeah. There's a few, actually, there's quite a few cop shows that come out this season. I wonder if it would be interesting to kind of compare their approaches. Probably not as focused and intelligent as this one.
This probably has less magic in it. Then we get to the Toei section of the show, starting off with One Piece, Wano Kuni, episode 905, Taking Back Otama, A Fierce Fight Against Hold'em. And I'm not going to watch any more One Piece after this episode, because it was... You talk about Dr. Stone slowing things down for people standing around for a minute. Phew, boy.
What, half a chapter?
I don't even know that. Basically...
One page.
It takes us up to... He's got... I mean, there's stuff in this episode worth watching. It just takes a bloody long time to get there. So the scene it replays is they're explaining that, oh, this guy, Hold'em, he's not the guy in charge of this town. He's just the guy who's fronting for Jack. If we beat him up, then Jack's going to show up. Then there's going to be real big trouble. So they get Luffy and Zoro to agree. Okay, we're just going to rescue Otama and we're going to steal that ship full of food that Speed's just brought into town. But in order to explain who Jack is, we get basically Zoro and Luffy were like, oh yeah, that guy. Oh yeah, yeah, he got beaten. He poisoned the cat and the dog and the elephant hit him. And then we get the flashback of him getting hit in the face by Zoo's elephant trunk, which to be fair is a scene well worth sharing again.
Oh yeah. Remember that more interesting episode we had all those years ago?
I mean, yes, he was. I'm not sure the episode was any more interesting than this was, but that particular scene was. Because this also, to be fair, this also has a similarly fucking excellent bit of animation in it. Just takes a long time to get there. So then you get a lot of this just generic goons getting cut down by Zoro and Akiko while Luffy tries to get Otama back. Luffy eventually punches the lion in the nose and the teeth, gets Otama back, and then Otama's explaining why her side of her face is sore, and then he's like, Luffy basically sees red at that point. He's like, what? Plans out the window, I'm gonna punch this guy. And
oh yeah.
Basically drops her in midair, presumably he's gonna grab her again at the start of the next episode, and then does the red hawk on Hold'em, and then Otama's like, that's just like Ace. Anarchy. And then, meanwhile, what's his face? Hawkins is stopped by a mysterious man in a mask. Who could be this man who's wearing Trafalgar Law's clothes and carrying Trafalgar Law's sword? Who could he possibly be?
That could be any captain of the Hard Pirates.
And Law's like, I can't let him see my face, because he knows our faces. I was like, I'm pretty sure as soon as you start like pulling people's hearts out of their bodies, he's going to know who you are as well, mate. But that's next week. And annoyingly, the preview makes that scene also look like fucking excellent, but I can't take the pace anymore.
Yeah.
Particularly not when there's better things to be watching. I'll just watch the GIFs on Twitter.
Yeah, it could be bad. Probably wise. And well, although if you're reading the comic, it's you can kind of forget how long it has been since where it is now and where the anime is currently at. It's like all these things sound like they're like
it's not that
ancient
long,
history. Yeah,
that's because the actual pace of this story in the comic is breakneck speed because he cuts all the stuff they're adding back into the anime out of it. To the annoyance of some readers, not to my annoyance, I really like it, but in the comic there's lots of fights which start and then you never see the ending. Whereas in this one I suspect we're going to see all the fights.
Oh, all the fights. Yeah.
Yes. So at least page one will get his due. Okay. Yeah, but this week's chapter's bloody bleak.
Oh God. Jesus. Just kind of rewind it all back. What the hell went wrong? Was this part of the plan? Probably not. Because have not had like a great track record on like sticking to plans and like making them work lately. And you know, I kind of wonder like a little bit because they have kind of failed or just gotten away before. Like what's going to be like the big shift that will turn this all in their favor, because you can't see them doing it by themselves now, especially if this plan has gone wrong and everything was going just fine for them and now it's just fucked. Like what, there's going to be some external thing that's going to come in between, like, you know, besides the rebellion, that's the plot that's going underneath, and then the alliance between Kaido and, the Shogun and other characters. Like there's gotta be some kind of third element that's gotta be introduced to try and upend that, because you can't see, like,
well, there's a hint of a possibility, a possible another element at the start of the chapter, is there not?
There is.
Yes. loads of people swear to help Wano, and it's like, okay, right, okay. Maybe they'll be showing up at all before the end. So, yeah, reading that apparently whichever structure it's emulating is the third act is normally the lowest point, and it's normally a short act as well of, like, massive setback.
Oh.
I can't remember which play structure he's deliberately emulating.
Well, obviously some manner of some kind of kabuki theater.
Something along those lines, yes, if not kabuki, something.
I mean, obviously with all of the motifs with the drawing, yes, the curtains and the shamans and plucking going on. Even the comic, you know, yes, you just like hear like the little sound effects in the margin going bang bang.
So it should be a 5-act story.
Hmm.
Yep, we shall see. We shall see. Meanwhile, what happened in Star Twinkle Pretty Cure episode whatever? I don't know the episode title.
Episode 35. Hikaru Student Council President, the Twinkle Election Battle. It's Madoka. She's going to be leaving school next year, and she wants to pass the torch of the Student Council Presidency to someone who has some good ideas for the future. And now the kind of Ojo-sama character, to kind of the, she has like the braids, she's just like the oh ho 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 ho. Always seem to be like the rival to Madoka, but is probably more an admirer or sees her something to aspire to. What's her name? Hime no Ojo. It's got Hime in her name, of course. Madoka overhears Hikaru talking with the girls about, oh, I wanted to accept this thing. Like we had the alien visit last time, we show him around town. Well, we like, cause like invite aliens from across the galaxy, you come and visit town, we can show them around, we'll show them around the school. We could be a great, like, exchange program between different planets. You know, basically, while I set up Galaxy High, is what I'm saying right here. Like, oh, okay. And Rocket thinks, hey, Carol, how would you feel about becoming a student council president? What, me? Yeah, yeah, because you've got some, like, crazy ideas for the future. Like, one more refreshing, it's someone comes out to me to come up with something fresh, like, you know, a new outlook on what the future of the school could be, you know, and for the students. Oh, I don't know, but if it's for you and for everybody else, then I can do it. Yeah, cool. But and then the Hibe Nojo is like, oh, but I thought I was going to be, like, I'm clearly the best candidate. Well, why don't we hold an election then? Now, wouldn't that be fun? It's like, yes, yeah, so I can show everybody, like, how much of a fine lady I am. So the campaign begins. Hime Nojo has her approach. She's plastered her face all over the school. There are like cardboard cutout standees you can put the face cutouts you can poke your head to and take a photograph with. And she says, oh yes, when I'm installed, there'll be like lots of new rules. You know, there'll be plenty of like addition in the quorum. There'll be plenty of tea parties and all of that. And you think, oh, she's going full on with the whole, kind of, she's called class as a conservative candidate. Hikaru then is a bit out of her depth. She tries to pitch her Galaxy High proposal, her platform to the student populace, and then they think, oh, Hikaru, you're so funny. Oh man, it's going to be like a laugh riot if you could let the president. Like, oh yeah, how about that? They try to emulate Madoka, because Madoka is like the one everyone loves. She always said, oh, the best idea is to emulate that, and think, okay, I'll just do what she does, and I'll be able to win the election. That's what people want, right? Madoka's like, it wasn't a point, dude. I wanted somebody to come out to me with fresh ideas. Not my ideas, not my approach. Something like new that the students can then, like, you know, imagine something different for themselves. And Hime Nojo then is comes across. It's more so she has very good ideas, but doesn't know how to convey them properly because she's such a braggart. She's actually been going around the school, taking a note of what needs kind of repairing and fixing. This window was cracked, its rating is loose, it could lead to an accident. And what's the operating an open door policy? By tea party, I mean, hey, if you got a problem, come into the student council meeting room and just like, we'll have some tea and we'll talk about it. It's actually pretty chill. Actually has some great ideas, but can't get them across. But she feels inadequate. Things like, oh, Kara is a popular candidate. She's doing what Monica does. Everyone loves Monica. Oh, I'll never be able to stand out. And which makes her a prime target then to get her essence absorbed and made into a weapon by Capar, who turns up outside the window. It's a pretty powerful one because it's the sort of negative emotion is directed at a single person rather than a kind of a broad, nebulous one. It's like someone who's like, you know, this feeling of jealousy or envy of somebody else. It's a particularly powerful power he contains by that. But, you know, comes across as saying, like, you know, in all the electioneering, you know, you're kind of putting up a face for the public, you know, which isn't actually who you truly are, and they can get lost sometimes. We found him in this notebook, which taken all of her ideas and things she wants to fix and improve in the school, and they thought, oh, well, I didn't know she's that way at all. She probably just doesn't understand where I'm coming from either, but if you talk about it and come to an understanding, maybe you can, like, come to a consensus rather than have to face off like this and all the mudslinging and all the backbiting and all of the . So when they get to election time, then going to give them the speeches, and Ikaru just, it's a good day, just concedes the election because I'm some dope. No one wants to vote for my galaxy high idea. Himenojo is obviously the perfect candidate here, so they're off and do her thing. It's like, yeah, this is pretty cool. If only our actual politics in our real world could be this forward thinking. Not just civil. Civil doesn't mean anything. I mean, actually, people who are understanding and willing to take other ideas on board, and maybe we can figure a way out of this mess. But we don't. But the cartoons show me a world that can be. So I will take the cartoon version for now as a balm for my soul.
Meanwhile, in the world of non-cartoons, in Real Soulgar, this time round, Nada turns to Canelo as the target for his demoralizing. As Canelo finds his soulmate, finally, in the form of guest star Hikaru Yamamoto, formerly of Kamen Rider Double, which he was the female lead in. And she was great in that. And I was like, when she showed up in this, I was like, I know that face from somewhere.
It's her.
I looked her up, and then, yes, it probably helped that she was holding a green slipper in her hand, which is what she used to hit the other leads with in Kamen Rider Double.
Uh-huh.
Which obviously that was a little nod, and apparently she's also now in a thing called The Woman of SRI, which is the Japanese CSI, I believe, which predates CSI by a year.
Ooh, which aging rock band did they get to do their titles with? Guitara Wolf. Guitara Wolf.
Which I guess if you predate CSI, I guess that makes you the Japanese Quincy then instead. She's Yui, Canelo's soulmate, who agrees to marry him as long as he doesn't do anything dangerous. Oh no, there's the dramatic tension for the episode. He wants to get married. He's found the ideal woman for him, but he's like, monsters keep on calling me. I've got to fight these monsters, because this week Creon has found a lost dinosaur toy who's been thrown into the recycling by accident. And the toy is like, no, my owner has betrayed me. I've been thrown away when I can still be played with. Throughout the episode, we get some decent fight choreography, this time with the three main leads outside of their costumes. So obviously been doing a fair bit of training throughout the series, and they can carry a scene without having to transform at this point. Black and Green end up in a fight with Geysorg again, and Bamba recognizes Geysorg's fighting style. Eventually Kano is like, You basically get the conversation where she asks him again, are you going to stop doing anything dangerous? And he's like, I'll have a word with you. And then he shows up to stop Creon, because while love is important, saving the world so that everybody's safe within it is more important. And because this is such a drastic change in his personality he's taken, he gets an insert song playing as he beats up the hench monsters.
Yeah.
Actually, though, he's beating up the dude who turns into a boat, who somehow survives being pulled into a black hole and being spat out again. Because essentially the monster was like eating trash, turning it into poison, which then your fellow was then putting into a big ball and he's going to release it over the earth and poison everybody on the planet. But the poison gets sucked into a black hole, turned into a blast, shot back at him. He gets pulled into a black hole and then spat back out again. Meanwhile, they're still fighting Geysorg and they knock his hat off.
Ooh.
And it's Nada. It was Nada all along.
Shit.
Which is, there's a clue before they knock his hat off because Bamba says that he's got a very simple fighting style. And then you go, ah, okay, right. So it's not the master. Who do we know hasn't been fully trained? Ah, it's Nada. So they're going to have to, they're basically, at the end of the episode, they're going, we've got to get him back. Also, meanwhile, Ota shows up saying that, their dinosaur dad, he says, you don't have to worry about looking for a wife anymore, Canelo. You can just crack on with saving the world. Don't stop worrying about that. And also, she's got a present for Melto, which is a giant plastic egg. It's clearly just the toy you're going to be able to buy.
Oh, right.
Of P-Tan. Well, maybe the toy, but with some black ink wash over it to pick out all the highlights, so the toy looks even better than when you buy it in the shops. We don't know what it is yet, but it's a present from your underwater dinosaur dad. So I guess that's going to hatch at some point down the line. Meanwhile, next week, it's the battle for Nada's heart. So
drama.
I don't know whether he is where he's getting in and out of the armor, or whether he's like come out somehow be separating into two beings. We shall find out. Find out next week. It was a pretty good episode, but it wasn't as good as Kamen Rider 01, where this week's episode is focused on the voice acting Huma Gear from last week's episode, who briefly showed up. And it turns out that she's illegal. She's an illegal Huma Gear because she's been made in the image of her manager's dead daughter.
Ooh.
And under Article 6 of the Humanoid Robot Act, you have to have permission to build Huma Gears in somebody else's image. And because the daughter died without giving permission, this android is illegal. Which then puts Aruto and aims at loggerheads again.
So, well, I'm sure the daughter didn't intend on dying so soon and didn't intend on her dad, you know, so stricken with grief to create a human fucking android replica of his dead daughter. So how is this one of those laws where, like, you know, it's always going to trap you because or do you just like sit your family down one day? OK, we got to make out the will. This in the event of our deaths, we all can make robot duplicates of each other. Is that clear? OK, signed off. Family meeting over. Adjourned.
Yeah. But basically it's to set the theme of parent and child throughout the episode, because we ended last week with your fella from Metsubajin Rai telling Jin that he was his son, and all throughout this episode, Jin's going, "Oh, you're my parent, I'm your child, what does that mean? What is the relationship between the two? It's blowing my tiny android mind." And then also, Aruto's thinking back of like, oh, when I was a kid, my dad had already died, but I had a Huma Gear to raise me, and it was something I needed to get me through the difficult time. And also, this Huma Gear saved my life when a town blew up. and I considered that Huma Gear to be my dad. So Jin's been given the task of stealing a progress key from one of the Kamen Riders, doesn't really matter which one. And he ends up stealing the Flying Falcon one from Aruto, and he gets to turn into a Kamen Rider himself. Huma Gear also gets turned into a monster, and Yua, the female cop, gets given Lightning Hornet by the mystery man we saw before in order to take down Metsubajinrai.net.
condemned them and are shoddy produced knockoffs.
Yes. So, well, yeah, these seem to be the same progress keys that Aruto's using. So where's this other guy getting them from if he's not getting them laser printed from space as Aruto is? Yes, yeah, so the Lightning Hornet, what's its catchphrase? Its catchphrase is piercing needle with incredible force. And it basically allows her to fly, and it also, so she becomes a hornet, she can fire lightning, but also, as well as being a hornet, she's also kind of like a hornet's nest, because she can then shoot other hornets out of her body.
It's a gun that shoots bees at you.
Yes. Something like that. The human gear turns into a frog thing, which shoots frogs out her mouth, so it's,
yes, just like nature.
There's like a little bit which reminded me where they're chasing through the woods, which reminded me a little bit of the chase through the woods to a degree in Spider-Verse.
Mm-hmm.
So I know everyone's getting influenced by Spider-Verse at the moment. I don't know whether that was or it wasn't, but it did remind me a little bit of it. So it ends up with Jin at first won't turn her into a monster because the father's still protecting her after she's been reprogrammed to be evil. And he's like, but why? Why would you, a parent, protect your child even now you know that she hates you? And he's like, that's what parents do. They protect their children regardless. And that's,
they put up with them.
Yeah, that sends Jin into a tizzy and he has to go back home and get a confidence talk from his dad. To get back, well, I say confidence talk, his dad basically just slaps a Kamen Rider changing belt, his eyes turn red, and he sends him out there to transform with the Flying Falcon key that he's already stolen. So in the end, they allow him to keep the backed up data of his Human Gear daughter, but they can't load her into the same body again, so she's now just an Alexa. Who reminds, but he's also now just calling him dad straight away. There was some decent acting all the way throughout this through most of the people. It sets up a Jin, there's like tension now with Jin. There's a glint that Jin could be good. He's only being evil because he's being raised by this evil father. And, it was quite good. The voice acting Human Gear was played by Karen Miyama, who was done actual voice acting. She was in Letter to Momo, and she was also Cure Whip in Cura Cura Precure a la Mode.
Okay. Can't say I've heard her.
You've never seen Letter to Momo yet?
I have not, somehow. I think it was... There have been screenings on an infrequent basis, you know, any kind of batch of, let's say... But it always seems to be on a day or on a time when I'd never be able to get to it. It's almost like starts at, well, let's say 6:30, but I gotta be at work at 7:30 that evening. So that's out. It's like, it always never seems to line up for me.
It'll probably turn up cheap again in the Christmas sale on all the anime.
Yeah, I should probably just pick it up then. I don't know. I just had set my mind for a while to see it in the cinema. I was like, okay, they're gonna be cool to see things. I missed so many times. Maybe I should just fucking buy the film altogether.
Yeah, I should really watch it since I bought it again, because I did enjoy it. And I know some people don't like it that much, but it's so well animated, and it is like My Neighbor Totoro if the Totoros were assholes. which is definitely my sort of thing. Then, finally, we've got Gegege no Kitaro, episode 76... Nurarion's Ambition.
Yes, yeah.
In which we weirdly get the same scene played twice, the same animation, but one of them's got extra inking on it. What is going on there?
I don't know. But the first one was just setting the scene. That was the cold open where it was just, there's something weird going on in this building site. I don't know. There's heard some weird rumors. You guys get back to work. And then they get attacked by a yokai. We presume a yokai.
Yes.
But then it was like again later on. But now I got the full backstory of that. Now Kitaro arrived on the scene not long afterwards to sort it out. But yeah, I don't know. It's just like
Extra
Shadows is kind of to build the atmosphere, build the mystery initially, but then thought, well, we got to quote back to this event that happened within the course of the episode again anyway. We'll just do it again, but we'll just make it, let's differentiate it by showing it. No, now we're in the present time of the speech, and we say we can get rid of the ominous shadow over it.
Yeah, because the original, it was like, it's got such heavy shadows, it reminded me of Hellboy. And I was like, oh, is this the style they're going for this arc? And no, it's not. And then when it came up again, I was like, did they accidentally animate it twice? Did they give it like two separate people to animate? But no, it's literally, I put the screenshot side by side, and it's literally the same thing, just with a filter over the top for another layer of animation.
Wish they kept the shadows, honestly.
Yes, I did as well. But having said that, the later scenes with around those builders is the three guys we see originally don't look like Mizuki character designs, but then there's other guys in the build in the construction workers who do look like Mizuki people. So yep. I was kind of torn. I do like the villain design, and I do like the plot of this. That Nurion is kind of he's like a competent Nozomi Otoko. In one respect, he's
like,
also here,
like forget Babylon. Here's your like complex political thriller right here.
Yes, because so essentially the plot is that I can't remember the yokai's. The yokai's getting annoyed because his forest has been dug up to make a golf course. A golf course development in this day and age. Maybe the economy is doing good and we just don't know about it. As they say twice in the episode. But it turns out that's being funded by Nurion in the first place, and he only seems to be doing this to recruit this yokai for something down the line to overthrow all of mankind and make this world for yokai again.
He's doing deals with government officials as well, and also putting bombs in their cars. Not killing them somehow, they're both critically injured. I do not understand how they escaped the blast, but they do. He's got some schemes, some ploys going on in the shadows.
The reason it connects to the previous story is they're still like, okay, who let the four treasonous generals out in the first place? Well, all we know was a yokai with a red face. Okay, the yokais with red faces, we know. And then eventually they see that the person that this yokai was dealing with was a yokai with a red face, who was the go-between him and Nurion, and it's like, and then you learn he's working for Nurion, and then Kitaro's dad's like, oh, that's bad news, son. Something untoward is going on here.
Yeah. It's kind of like Kitaro tries to talk to the yokai who's been aggrieved here. They say, no, I'm pissed off, they cut down my forest, and have a fight, they immobilized each other and said, okay, man, how about we talk about this? We're calling a jump to resolution, okay? Like, no use of mad boss. Don't need to jump to fight straight away. Okay, fine. Well, we're going to talk about it. I will tell the humans about what's going on. And I said, okay, guys, you got to stop building because the man there is really pissed off. If he grew this forest, took him ages to do it, he just cut it down in a single day. It's totally not on. But we got to start job, man. We don't know why we're doing this or how we're doing this, but it's our job. We got to put food on the table. And then we get like a phone call then. It's just like, what's that? Phone call for me, yes sir. It was a stop construction, but our jobs, full compensation, yes sir. Okay, no problem. Okay, guys, you're off the clock, but you know you're gonna get in your pigeon next month, so don't worry about it. And it's like Kira was like, what the fuck happened there? Who called them? So besides Nurion, that's gonna be. I gotta learn how to pronounce that properly for the next couple of weeks. As well, he's always has some obvious like evil scheme going on in the background. He's also saying, Kitaro, you're in the whole thing of like getting people to talk and trying to come to understanding and consensus and reach out to their feelings and hearts and minds. That's old hat. The only way can be people actually change their habits is to hit them in the pocket. That's what I've been doing here. The only language I understand that speaks makes the world go round is money. Money and power and influence. And that's the way I'm going to resolve all your kind of problems. fighting fire with fire. They're going to, like, do the dodgy backroom political deals. I'll do the dodgy backroom political deals and sort everything out. I'm Akio Otsuka. I approve this message.
Yeah, thankfully, using a different voice to what he's using in all the other things we watched. Yeah, isn't that, I think the yokai thingy, which I'm not sure it will come into play here, is like he moves into your house and he won't leave. I think that's his behaviour.
Oh, he's going to, he's going to, like, become a prime minister and then pass legislation to extend his terms. The bastard.
I did go back and read the story that's in the collections. It's surprisingly short and surprisingly not like this, so we'll see. Mm. Having said that, if at one point he manages to get, I think he gets Kitaro trapped in concrete, but he's somehow Kitaro's hand didn't get trapped in concrete and Kitaro's hand takes revenge on him.
That'd be good.
It'll be good.
Would fit him as well. Gets his mafia connections, his Yakuza connections, just like to bury him in the foundation of a new skyscraper building. You know, that's a real like gangster film kind of thing to do that suits his tone of his character.
Next week, it is Neko Senin's Revenge, in which they go to a town where there are no humans, just cats.
Well, that's good news for Nekomusa, eh?
Well, she didn't look very happy about it in the preview.
There's too many cats.
Also, the red-faced yokai, whose name we should probably learn, because I guess he's going to show up more than his bosses, appears to be showing up as well.
Sanbo something. Yeah, something in that vein.
He's got a little lower lip which goes out like that. I suppose you probably talk like that.
Very well spoken, though, and I can chauffeur a car very well, too.
Yes.
Obviously, tinted windows and that. Pull him up at a red light. He's like, what the fuck is that guy from? Who is he?
I was going to say, Nurion can kind of pass as a human being. His chauffeur less so.
Well, very much going to wear like, you know, a massive like 3-gallon hat at all times. Yes, I recently returned from my holiday to Dallas. It was a little souvenir. I think I can pull it off. What do you guys think?
No, see, I think with Nurion is that people would just, they'd notice it, but they'd be too polite to say anything about it.
Because it's kind of like it's kind of head thing, like hydrocephaly or something.
Yeah. I think that's that. Because he, in the comic, he's just passing for human. Without any problems. Yeah, so that was your lot for this week, unless there's anything else you watched that we need to be aware of.
Was there anything else? I don't believe so. Was it a short thing? No. Like I said, I will look at one or two of these other cop shows. I think one is just an Otome again thing, so why isn't it won't be a lot for me there? It was like Special Crime Investigation Unit, which by sound was trying to be cop craft, but again,
another one of those. I think they're just behind Isekai in terms of overdone genres for 2019 is the supernatural cop.
Yeah, my theory on that is. Blood Blockade Battlefront, that was so good, and that did quite well in home video sales in Japan, I understand. And I think they're trying to strike it lucky again, something in that mold. Forgetting that the comic was quite well executed and quite well laid out, and it was a lot more than just a police procedural, it's also these other elements that made it good, which you have, I think, leaving by the wayside when they're trying to chase that glory again.
Before we go, though, we should lay it on the people who are coming to HabanaCon exactly what we're doing.
My God. Yeah, we'll be all over that fucking schedule.
Yeah, that's why I'm just getting the schedule out to give this a rundown. So on Friday at 4:00 in the afternoon in Event Room 2, I will be running Brain Melting Anime for an hour. Which already does not seem enough time based on what I've stuck in my paddle notes already, so I'll have to be, as always, it's chiseling away at my paddle till it fits into an hour. Even though I thought this was a subject where I wouldn't have to do that. But too thorough. That's the problem.
You're just too good at your job, Ryan.
I know. You won't got anything on Friday because you're getting in
I will
late.
Only. I'll be flying back from Korea and landing that afternoon, then going home to sleep, and then I'll get up and do some panels.
Okay.
I think I'll be okay. Well, they asked them nicely. I can't say no to them.
Yeah, exactly.
And I already had the ideas ready to go, and I hadn't been to another con this year, so I wanted to get something out. So why not?
So, yeah, you probably find me in the traditional games room on that Friday, because I should be plenty of time, I think, for me to play traditional games on that day. So who knows?
After Panel Dice Club.
Yeah, after Panel Dice Club. Then on the Saturday, what's coming up first? I do believe it'd be you first with Anime for Sane People.
Anime for Sane People. It's not as outrageous as it sounds. It's just a general sort of some kind of recommendations for people who might be got into anime or know somebody who's got into it. You've given them all the big names. You've shown them Bebop. You've shown them Studio Ghibli. You've shown them all upon big hitters. But then they ask you, well, where do I go from here? And they thought, well, you don't just like throw them straight into JoJo or straight into fucking Haybar or something like that.
What?
You want to be like, or like, you know, oh, this is pretty popular. It's like, you know, based on long run show and kind of fun. And no, I'm a normal person. I want like, you know, something more in this vein, something more in this vein. So I'm just kind of take some of those well-known titles and sort of break them down a bit into their, what their appealing factors are, and then try and recommend something that might suit somebody who latched onto that. So if you liked maybe the sort of the, we're saying Bebop, the character dynamics there, you have like, you know, the wily rogue, you have the kind of the crouchy old dude, the femme fatale. Here's something in that vein that may appeal to you, i.e. Lupin. Or if I don't have organized crime drama, that I have some other recommendations for that, and in that going that direction as well. So just kind of spiral out from the well-known one. So for anybody who's maybe knows somebody who could use some push in the right direction, or even if you yourself want to like expand your own interests, if you're a relatively new to it, then this probably could be the panel for you. So come on down to that at 1300 on Saturday afternoon
and see if there's any crossover with my brain melting anime panel. I think there's only one thing which might cross over. One would hope. If you want to see them, if you want to give somebody a push in the wrong direction, come to my panel. Then at, so that's in event room 4, event room 2 at 4 o'clock.
It is 4 o'clock, yes. Ah, yes. The perennial favorite, Hell in a Cell, best anime fight scenes. It's back, it's leaner and meaner and louder. It'll be 100% new footage. I'm not at asterisk 100% new footage shown within this panel. So that's a landmark in itself, but I'm going to try to do a little more to get the crowd involved and engaged. Got a few little things in there to try and encourage people to just kind of shout and hoot and holler and get all riled up for it. So hopefully my strategy pays off and everyone have a great time and make a nice electric atmosphere, much like a live wrestling show or other or similar event. Come on, get your chance ready.
And then at 7 o'clock in both event room 1 and event room 2, it's so big it cannot be contained. It's Mad Stravaganza, A Christmas Together. 7 to 8:30. A full 90 minutes, it's the full Mad Stravaganza effect. Don't know what's in it yet. Well, actually, I've got an idea what's in it. I've probably got too much stuff already, so, to be honest. But, and that's before I've put the Christmas things in. But,
which you can also see a crossover with a brain-melting anime.
Yeah, it's probably a decent amount of crossover there. Though, probably not as much as I'd like, because I suspect, I think a lot of the things, even in my brain-melting anime, are too brain-melting for, or too niche for people to make mads of. I don't think I've ever seen a Haybot mad. But there you go. But yeah, there'll be all sorts of stuff. I've already made one thing myself, so.
Yeah.
Expect more Milton Keynes specific material, is all I should say.
Oh, excellent. I love that place.
then there's another day. That's not all you get. on the Sunday, there is, at 10 o'clock in the morning, myself, yourself, and Paul Digicarrot. It's year's best anime returns.
Bright and early.
Bright and early.
Putting on masks for you. Evangelize.
Our panel of avid anime watchers are here to tip you the wink on what TV anime out of the hundreds aired in the last 12 months are worthy of your time and attention. Who wrote that? It's terrible.
It's terrible
when you wrote it yourself and you go, that's pretty well written.
Shakespeare, Hemingway.
We'll have a working laptop which won't slow down when it tries to connect to the internet this time, and we won't have quite as many anime as we had last time, and we may not be as brave at picking things out which have just started airing.
In fact, I specified just a clause, within the last 12 months, not the calendar year, just because some things may have gotten short shift, yes, or weren't done airing at the previous panel, so we couldn't form a concrete opinion on this yet.
One thing in particular.
But I could form a concrete opinion on something that I'd seen two episodes of, but so maybe take my recognition with a grain of salt there.
I think I'll run down what we picked last time as if we keep on doing this, we'll slowly build up a catalogue of things people can go back and watch.
Come back at our findings.
Cause, yeah, I'd still stand by Karakuri, sir, cause even if you wouldn't.
Yeah, well, that's fine. I went up and did intervention that wasn't for me, but it went well for you. So hey, as long as someone enjoyed us, because that still counts as a recommendation from the panel. So it still stands. It gets in.
Yeah, it does. And then finally, I've lost the page I had open.
I have it here because later on in the afternoon, and in much sense, more since about hours, at 1:30 in the afternoon in Event Room 2, there's any Movember. Well, we'll be talking about some famous mustachios and other luxurious facial hair in the realm of anime and attached Japanese space force facts and how it's viewed in society. And, you know, for any of you more hirsute cosplay people, if you're struggling to try and find somebody, you don't just want to do this character's dad again, then maybe come by and get a few more ideas. And while you're out there, you've also raised some cash for a good cause. So I started a Movember space, so anybody feels like coming along down the panel, if they enjoy it, why not, you know, send a little money that way to Goodwill, to a good cause, so you can hopefully learn, be entertained, and also be donating to charity, as you should do on Sunday, the holiest of days.
Yeah. And then we'll be sending our lawyers along to Event Room 4 at 4 o'clock in the afternoon to have a word with Elliot.
Venture Forest. Well, no, this is a manga library.
Oh yeah, totally different than the £100 anime collection.
Imitation is the best form, sincerest form of flattery.
That is, right? Yes, it is. Yeah, and of course, our plan was to not do a theoretical £100. Was to foolishly take £100 and spend £100 at the convention.
Yeah. I'd say if there's anybody who will be able to do a thorough job on that, Elliot would be your boy. Yes. He is the manga man. This is the guy who made a search engine to try and find the stuff. So I think if you want to figure out how to fill your shelves for a low, low price, then this is the guy to see in a panel to go to.
Yep, 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 yep. Okay, that is everything. Yeah, at some point, I should probably watch Twitter. I should be preparing a anime wits and wagers, because I was told I couldn't run it because they already had too many quizzes, which when you look at the schedule, that's probably correct. But yeah, I should probably do it in the games room at some point, regardless.
Ooh, pirate radio, pirate quiz show, yeah.
It's playing a board game into the board game room. I think that's perfectly legitimate.
Yeah, but we'll just pull potential contestants away from the other quizzes. It's like,
there's a lot of quizzes. Righty-ho, we'll be back next week, hopefully with Dwayne. And with yet more anime, My Hero Academia. What else we got returning? Or new stuff?
Some other things coming up, ain't there?
There is Stars Align. I believe that's on Funimation. Why have I lost that free? I used to have that those top three things frozen.
Show me the calendar.
Yeah, I've lost my formatting on the...
this calendar, please.
On my spreadsheet. We've got Kabukicho Sherlock. That's also on Funimation.
Right.
And My Hero Academia. I think those were the only three extra things which were on my radar.
Yeah, I see what else is coming out there.
Yeah. I was tempted to watch that thing by the best pervert in anime, but it's written by a guy who's never written anything I like, so I'm not sure I should be bothered.
It's just going to be skeezy.
Well, it'll be decent.
It'll be well done skeez, but yes. It won't be well written skeez, which, you know.
Yeah. Whereas I've forgotten that Valkyrie Drive was at least written by the guy who writes My Hero Academia.
So.
I was like, oh yeah, that would be what, and also Gundam Build Fighters. Like, oh yeah, that's why that was superior, is because it's a guy who can actually write as well as being a pervert.
It's already out, but if I have a go at that Black Fox film, which is kind of came out on this as well.
Yeah, I saw some clips of that. It looked pretty good.
It looked pretty good, so I think.
But I might just save that for a rainy day, and that might be an emergency dynamite in the brain episode.
Yeah. Well, the people have to know.
But yeah, I think that's mostly. And let me just do a quick double check on the live chat in case anything particularly enticing has surfaced out of nowhere, as these things are wont to do on occasion. Scrolling down to the bottom. God, I've got too many tabs open and I keep on accidentally switching.
Oh, No Guns Life. Where is that?
Oh,
is that
yeah, I forgot about that. Where is that?
That's on Crunchyroll, if I recall. That'll be airing October 11th.
Yes, actually I was.
Oh, don't know what. Oh, do apologise, people. You've got a tiny bit of Would I Lie to You appearing in the podcast there. The aforementioned switch tab was apparently a YouTube tab with one of those street illegal Would I Lie to You compilation videos.
Oh, no. Rob Wright now. Why do you think about No Guns Alive?
Yeah. Also, Pet. I suspect Pet is not coming out this season at this point, because I think they've taken off all mention of October 2019 off their Twitter now, and they're only promoting the stage play at the moment.
Whoops.
That's fine. Take your time, because I feel like I will enjoy it when it arrives, and if they want to take their time with it, I'll be more than happy for that to be the case. I guess. Yeah, Beastars is Netflix, isn't it? So you don't have to worry about that.
Don't have to worry about this. Cooking Master Boy will never surface anywhere. But my God, you want to.
Yeah, I think that is the case. Yeah, it's another production IG. I'm surprised it's not surfacing anywhere, but.
Or Egg Car. Oh, where's Egg Car?
No, I searched for bloody Egg Car. I was looking for Egg Car and Go-Go Atom on the torrent sites just to watch it raw. Nope. They may just be on YouTube. There's a good chance they're just on YouTube. Because I saw the next thing along was Sylvanian Families, and I'm like, oh, I know that'll just be on YouTube eventually, so.
Actually, we were checking if the studio or whatever is like a YouTube channel up, there might be perhaps something related to it up on there.
Yeah, there's something, but that's something from December 2017.
No, guess not then.
And there's some sort of like a live action announcement, I think, of the two series. Because they're airing together, Egg Car and Go-Go Atom are. Whereas Sylvanian Families will show up eventually on the English language Sylvanian Families YouTube channel and the Takara Tomy one. And nobody will watch it except people who like Sylvanian Families and don't care about its general place within the anime business, because I actually think they're not bad CG animation, really. They do the job of what they're supposed to do, which is look like the Sylvanian Families toys.
Excellent.
Excellent, excellent. Righty-ho, we'll be back next week with all of that. And
okay.
That's your lot. Goodbye.
Till next time, folks.